Apparently, having a mustache makes you look 60.
I mean, like, having just a mustache is, like, kind of a 1980s thing.
You're
like,
oh, agreed.
You're Magnum P.I., you're
yes.
Burt Reynolds.
Yes. I love it. What great comparisons.
Yeah, these are, like, at the time, I guess those were fine because everybody was all coked out of their minds or something and couldn't tell the difference. But now that we know better, like, we've all decided this is not a good thing.
No, I agree. It's a bad thing, and yet you still have to do bad things sometimes. Like, you still have to, you know, we don't all dress in tuxedos every day. We sometimes, you know, people wear socks with sandals. You know, it's just, you got to do what you're feeling at that moment. And yesterday, I was saying, you know, I thought to myself, it's Movember. We need a shakeup around here. Let's see what happens. It's a grand social experiment and one that it was well worth doing.
Magnum PI 11 weirdo.
Welcome into the Weekly Run. I'm Mandy Larson, the one with the mustache. Eric Walden is the one making fun of me. We are the Utah Jazz beat writers for the Salt Lake Tribune. We've had a lovely week of Jazz coverage over the last week. Jazz went 2-2 in that stretch, and now, you know, two losses, one each to Sacramento to the Clippers, then one last night to the Philadelphia 76ers. We thought we'd kind of break down where the team is right now. Obviously, we've had an injury since then. Ed Davis out for 4 weeks. We'll talk about the center rotation. We'll talk about just how good Donovan Mitchell has been. One leading statistical publication has him as actually maybe the best offensive player in the league so far. And then we'll talk about kind of the overall state of this team and what we think about what we've learned over the first 2 weeks of the regular season. Eric, where would you like to start?
I'm good with any of those. I mean, honestly... What, pick one of those games?
A topic? What would you like?
Well, so, I mean, the topic du jour of the last several days, so not du jour, I guess. What's the plural of that? I don't speak French.
I don't know.
The topic of the days was the rebounding woes against the Kings and Clippers. It was kind of interesting that, like, to me, that Quinn Snyder, like, made it a point to let it be known how aggrieved he was at the offensive rebounding, and then the moment that someone asked him about it, he's like, well, we've been really good at it all season except for those two games. And it's like, Yes, we know that. We're aware of that. But, like, you were the one who brought up, like, that it was bad that you were giving up offensive rebounds that directly led to two losses.
I'll be honest. I didn't interpret him saying that, as kind of a...
You Quinn apologist.
Being defensive.
You Quinn apologist.
No, I'm not. Anyway... but I thought he said, hey, we have the potential to be good here. Let's do the things that make us good. Obviously I do think offensive rebounding cost them the Sacramento game. I thought even though that was a road game in LA against the Clippers that you would have expected to lose coming in, that they only shot 20% from three was an opportunity to win that game. And you really limited Kawhi Leonard through three quarters and everything like that. I thought the Jazz absolutely should have won that game and didn't solely because of offensive rebounds. And then they played the best offensive rebounding team in the league last night and limited them to seven and doubled them up. Were dominant.
Yeah.
And so to kind of try to figure out what was going on, I've actually gone back and watched every single defensive rebound from those last three games. Or offensive rebound by the other team. Last night, defensive rebounds as well. And I found that basically, I didn't think that the Jazz were good last night. They got in front of Al Horford. But so many of those possessions, the Sixers didn't even try to get the rebound on. Like, I think so much of last night was Joel Embiid being tired and running three-point line to three-point line and not really being involved. Like, I don't know what he did during his two-game suspension. You know, really, he was off for 5-6 days, but if he was drinking Shirley Temples or just wasn't happy with the altitude or what, but he looked tired last night.
Honestly, I haven't followed his career enough that I can have, like, a very scientifically valid opinion on this, but I've just in researching him and other Sixers in the lead up to that game, I found it interesting that he's averaging only 25 minutes a game this season. I don't know where he's at, like,
well,
his career. Clearly he's over that.
Yeah.
But, I wonder what the rationale is for that.
I mean, they've had, obviously, Al Horford's a good backup center.
Yeah.
He got kicked out of one game early.
Okay, that probably contributed to that. That's right. He did get kicked out of that Wolves game.
So, you know, I think there's some good reasons
That said, like...
And then he was in foul trouble last night.
I don't think
he
could have played a ton more last night
true.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting.
And part of that was just because Al Horford was having a really bad game. I think... He and honestly, the conditioning issue with Joel Embiid is something that teams have exploited before. You know, I'm thinking in last year's second round playoff series that was something that Toronto thought they could get some wins on over Embiid, and part of that was because he was hurt. But that is kind of a question with him, and I thought it showed last night that he wasn't his usual offensive rebounding self. But the Jazz did a very good job on preventing Al Horford from going. But you know, every possession the Sixers were dropping three or four guys back. Whereas the Clippers were sending maybe two or three or even four players to the rim to try to grab offensive rebounds. And while as a team, you kind of welcome that in some sense because you should get some transition baskets the other end, the Jazz didn't at all against Sacramento and L.A. And so, you know, you have to get the rebound first in order to get that. So I thought the Jazz both played better, and for whatever reason, their opponent just wasn't as up to it as the Clippers and Kings were.
Yeah. And, you know... Going back to what I said earlier, like, Quinn is not incorrect in that they have been pretty good at it overall this year. At the moment, as of right this second, they're ninth in the league in defensive rebound percentage, which is...
Where do you think they'll end up at the end of the year?
Probably a few spots below that, I would guess.
Oh, really? I would bet they end up higher.
You think they're going to go higher? Yeah. What's your rationale for that?
Rudy is still really good. Ed Davis is still really good. And I think the Jazz's defense, in terms of the kinds of shots they allow, prevents teams from getting as many offensive rebounds as they're used to, because Rudy Gobert is so good at preventing shots around the rim, which are the most frequently offensive rebounded shots, that the shot profile of other teams prevents them from getting as many rebounds.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good theory. Mine basically came down to, as the season progresses and guys get a little more comfortable, I suspect that we're going to see more lineups involving smaller guys, and just as a natural byproduct of that, get not a ton fewer rebounds, but a few fewer, and so drop a couple spots.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a reasonable, like, honestly, kind of regress to the mean sort of opinion, and I think that's
just the more that you have lineups out there featuring Boyan and Joe Ingles, neither of whom are, you know, fantastic rebounders.
Right.
It's just, yeah, that's all. That's my rationale. That's my thinking.
Okay, yeah, and I don't know that we'll see more of those guys than we have seen so far.
Maybe not.
Makes sense.
All right, what do you want to discuss now?
Let's go Donovan.
I'm done with the rebound.
No, I agree. I think it was a weird two-game issue, and I think it's largely solved, and it's not, like, among my top five worries for this team.
Yeah. All right, then.
Let's talk Donovan.
Donovan's good.
Donovan is excellent. Holy cow, he's excellent. I mean, last night was even not one of his most remarkable games in the end, although he set the tone in the first quarter by hitting three mid-range jump shots in a row, but the degree to which he is making the right decision. He got to the foul line six times last night. He only made three of them. That was kind of a bummer, but, you know, ultimately the Jazz had kind of won the game anyway. Got to the line 14 times against the Clippers. He's getting to the line more often. He's nailing mid-range shots, frankly, in an unsustainable rate. You know, he's making about 60% of them right now, and he just can't.
And honestly, we saw that play out over the course of the Sixers game.
That's a good point.
It started out incredibly hot, and then as the game went on, tailed off in the mid-range.
Yeah, and I also thought they adjusted a little bit to not just give him mid-range shots. But that teams are adjusting to stop Donovan Mitchell from taking mid-range shots is so good for everybody else. Is good for Donovan getting to the rim, is good for Rudy Gobert getting open dunks at the rim, is good for Jazz getting open threes if someone shifts over to prevent Rudy Gobert from getting to the rim. You know, like, it's just, it opens up a lot if teams are actually worried about Donovan hitting those.
Yeah, it's been curious to me these last few days hearing so many people ask Quinn about, well, what do you think about Donovan Mitchell taking all these mid-range shot, and it's like, while I get what they're driving at, like, what's he supposed to say? You know, it's like, yes, in an ideal world, you would want layups or dunks, and yes, in an ideal world, you would take a ton of three-pointers, and that would be exclusively it. But, yeah, guess what? Sometimes teams scheme against that. And so the way that you can make them pay is by hitting more mid-range shots. I actually had a conversation with Gordon Monson about this on his radio show a few months back, in which he was just
lamenting. You talked to Gordon? I'm just kidding.
I talked to Gordon, yeah. And he was trying to make the point that mid-range was dead. And I brought up, like, all these elite scorers in the NBA who make extensive use of the mid-range game.
Yeah.
And how, you know, while it may be the least optimal shot, that doesn't make it a less important one if you use it correctly, which is what we're seeing Donovan do for all those reasons that you just mentioned. If he stays effective in using it, yeah, all of a sudden Rudy gets more looks at the rim, which he was made it a point that he would definitely like. And all of a sudden Joe and Boyan and Royce are getting, you know, more open three-pointers.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just this great domino effect that you'd be silly to turn down when Donovan is being this good at it thus far.
Look, and I'm math guy. I'm you know, don't take mid-range captain, but Quinn raised this point, and it's like among two-point shots, and he still thinks they should take more three-point shots than they're currently taking.
Yep.
But among two-point shots, you want the easiest look. And the reason we like layups and dunks is because they are easier than mid-range shots. But if the defense is backing up and there are two guys defending the layup, all of a sudden the mid-range shot is the easier of the two-point shots between that and a layup. So now instead of the last two seasons, Donovan's first two seasons, where he was kind of attacking these bigger rim protectors as a 6'1 guy, now he's pulling up with all the space, honestly with 10 feet of space in every direction, and hitting these jump shots in rhythm. And I think that's good. You know, what we don't want to see is, I would rather see Donovan take that 15, 16-foot jumper any day over him taking an 8-foot floater that's contested.
Yeah, for sure. And, you're right. In terms of talking about, you know, the number of three-pointers that this team could stand to take, there is room for growth there. At the moment, the Jazz are 27th in the league in three-pointers attempted per game.
Where are they in terms of three-point rate? Because the Jazz are also have been a relatively slow-paced team with not that many shots because they can't stop turning the ball over.
I'm sure you'll find that before.
I will. They are 19th in the league in three-point rate.
Yeah, so again, room to improve there, especially given...
And in the last couple of Quinn years, they've been top 10-ish.
Yeah, so for now, Donovan shooting those, you know, in-rhythm, squared-up, mid-range jump shots, good.
Good.
Ideally, it'll help turn into more three-pointers down the road.
Yeah. And I think I also think he can turn that screen and take the three rather than take a couple steps in sometimes and hit the mid-range.
Yeah.
But honestly, if he's hitting the mid-range at 60%, it doesn't matter. Like, keep doing that. If you can do that, keep doing it, because he's been good at that so far. His season percentage did drop last night from 16 to three points. So he's now shooting 58% from 10 to 16 feet, 52% from 16 to three-point range.
Ooh, egregious.
42% from three. He's been fantastic. Like,
yeah, he really has.
He's 538 had him as the best player in the league so far, based on their new Raptor metric, which takes into account all sorts of tracking and data and whatnot. Also reflects that he's been much better on the defensive end as well. But this is the Donovan Mitchell we wanted to see, where he's in control, efficient, not turnover prone, getting to the free throw line, and a star at all three levels.
Yeah, this was the Donovan Mitchell that Jazz fans were hoping to see last year.
That's what,
you know,
I
going
said.
From year one
okay.
to two.
Okay, fair. That's a new point.
You didn't say that.
That's a good point. Go ahead.
Jeez. Interrupting my train of thought, man. With more than that mustache, I'm going to avert my eyes again.
Good.
Yeah. As I was saying, this was the Donovan people wanted to see last year, and for, you know, a whole host of reasons, we didn't. But seeing it now, impressive, and also just given how everything else has gone, you know, very necessary. Given the start of Mike Conley, given the start of Joe Ingles, you know, Bogey's had his moments, but I think it's fair to say that, you know, had it not been for Donovan Mitchell really kind of taking things in his hands at certain points,
yeah,
this team would be in worse position than it's in.
Yeah, you probably, I mean, they probably lose the OKC game. They probably lose last night. That might be the only two that flip. But, all right, that's 3-5.
Yeah, that's 3-5.
That's bad. Mike Conley, thoughts? 7.8 PER so far.
That's pretty bad, right?
Yeah.
15 is league average?
Yes.
Yeah, so...
I mean, PER is not a good stat anyway, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
He seemed a little more in control last night.
Yeah.
He seemed to kind of be picking up on some more of the nuances. I think the increased energy level that he was putting up there, you know, he made the joke after the game, and maybe it wasn't a joke, that he had told the team that they could fine him $100 for every box out he missed from now on, so he was making it a point to just run around like a crazy man, throwing his body all over the place. I don't know if, you know, just making it a point to have...
No, I think
right,
that's good.
...to exert yourself that extra bit.
It's kind of the Ricky Rubio defense strategy, right?
Right, yeah.
Loose ball strategy, anyway.
But, again, like... All these criticisms we've been seeing of him about, you know, just people hitting the panic button after seven games, it's just so ridiculous to me. It's like, I suppose, like, you know, him being 32 years old, you could theoretically make an argument, oh, he's just, like, fallen off a cliff physically and can't do it anymore. But, I mean, I tend to think that all his previous years of experience and showing that he's capable of still playing at a high level would take precedence to me, and I think we saw some signs of that last night. You know,
yeah.
Again, not like this spectacular performance. You know, it wasn't the 29-point game, but you saw definite signs of progress in terms of recognition and in terms of comfort, in terms of, you know, feel for the game out there within the system.
Rudy Gobert wants the ball down low more. What say you?
I say, why are you trying to get Rudy in trouble by making him say things like that on the record to you?
Basically, I talked to Rudy after the game, the Clipper game, and was like, hey, I was doing a story on the offense, it being a bottom 10 offense so far despite the pickups. And I was like, so Rudy, just, you know, from your point of view, what's going on with the offense? And he said, they're not getting me the ball enough. And it was the quote that I tweeted out. And I'm like, I was kind of stunned enough to be like, well, don't you think that's because they're teams are guarding you differently, that they're dropping more on pick and roll? Because a lot of teams have shifted now is no rollers behind is what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what, never let Rudy Gobert behind you, because otherwise he will just dunk on you, right? Like,
yeah.
This is a very logical thought. And more teams have switched to this. And he said, in some games, yes, but in other games, I still don't think my teammates are finding me enough. And I'm like, okay, I kind of gave you the out and you didn't take it. So
yeah,
here we are.
Fair game, yeah. At this point.
Now I understand why that would cause frustration among his teammates to, like, cause when a player asks for the ball more, that's a story. Regardless, I do think it's an interesting question of whether or not the Jazz should find Rudy Gobert down low more. He has very high turnover rates right now down low.
Yep.
But he still, you know, converts shots at 62% and is, if he does catch a ball, he's a good bet to finish it, you know, it's a good efficient play most of the time. He can't force shots like he has at times during the season, and I think that's been a concern. The famous brick of a hook shot being a notable example, but
yep.
In general, yeah, you want to get the ball to Rudy down low more, and there's a reason why he's been scoring less is because his teammates haven't found him as effectively as last year, and so I think he has a point there.
Yeah, to a certain degree, I would say that's true. He's playing two more minutes a game and taking 2.5 fewer shots a game this season thus far. Again, small sample size. And again, you know, you've brought in Boyan and Mike and, you know, these other guys to theoretically...
take some shots.
Yeah. Take some shots. That said, like, he's got a point, but only up to a point. You know, there have been, like, sporadic moments where I thought, you know, they could have found him. But generally... I mean, the fact is he's not a polished offensive player in terms of shooting the ball, and he is really only effective at scoring when he's within like 3 feet of the hoop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've seen so many occasions this year where Joe is trying to get something going for Rudy on a pick and roll, and the ball winds up finding its way to Rudy, like requiring 4 steps from him to the basket. Right. And just
if he has to dribble, it's
right,
probably
and that's going to end in disaster almost every single time, or it's going to end in at least, you know, best case scenario, usually like some kind of wild missed shot attempt, you know, which is at least, I guess, preferable to a turnover, him just coughing it up. But yeah, I mean, I guess I kind of take the position that, like, since he hasn't really shown a ton of progress in that area, like your options for doing things there are a little more are a bit limited.
I thought last night was about the perfect balance, honestly.
Yeah,
like even against a really good center defender in Joel Embiid, maybe the second best center defender in the league, I thought he did a, you know, he was 4 for 8, got 14 points, 8 shots is about perfect. You know, last year he had 8.8 per game.
Yeah.
That's probably what you want. You want to find him on switches down low, and when he outruns guys and you have a mismatch, and I thought the Jazz did a good job of feeding him there. I thought there were a couple times where like Mike Conley does still kind of thinks of him as Marc Gasol, and that you can pass him the ball at 14 feet and everything's going to be okay, and it's not.
Yeah.
But in general, I thought they made an effort to make him happy last night, and I think it in general, again, worked well, except for the times where, you know, clearly it was the wrong read.
Yeah.
So you can't force it to him, obviously.
Right.
That's dumb, and I think even Rudy would think so. But I do agree with him that in the first 7 games that I thought that there were times where the lob was the correct read or the dump-off pass was a correct read, and it wasn't made.
Yeah. One thing I think, I guess maybe I could take his side on. We saw this in the Sixers game last night. Actually, from the Sixers' perspective, they were very kind of impressive. I think they had 3, maybe 4 well-designed out-of-bounds plays that resulted in, like, lobs at the hoop, you know, to Matisse.
Those
Matisse
were
Thybul
so
got
badly
one.
Defended, though. I was – anyway.
They were, but I'm saying mad at the, at the same that. Time, like, I don't think it would necessarily hurt anything to try a few – you know, throw a few
they
more
do,
of those
though.
Rudy's way.
Like – One of
I'm
their.
I'm not saying they never do. I'm saying it wouldn't hurt to like try it a little more often. Probably.
I think they do a lot. Honestly, like yeah. I think like one of Quinn Snyder's like early game staples is that little rub play, which gets Rudy catching the ball at the block but moving to the rim. We've seen that a lot. We've seen him get that like little baseline elbow pass that then Joe Ingles or Donovan or whoever can come off of like. I honestly think they run about as many ATO kind of plays as you can for a big man with no skill.
All right. Well, in that case, more games like the Sixers game.
Yay.
And keep Rudy happy.
Keep Rudy happy. And because honestly, he has just been terrific defensively.
Yes.
Terrific. I can't, like, he's the defensive player of the year again. Like, you know, it's 8 games in. But if he continues playing like this, he's the defensive player
of
the year.
Let's start the campaign right now.
We should. Like,
let's go,
he deserves it.
Let's talk to Derek Garduño, find out what the plan is.
We should create the campaign this year. We should give Derek a break.
I think that might be a conflict of interest.
Fair. No, but Rudy is the defensive player of the year.
All right. Maybe. 2-time reigning defensive player of the year. Do you think he can win a third?
Yes.
You don't think voter fatigue might be a thing?
Sure, it might be. But we've had 3-time winners
of
awards.
You're arguing he's deserving of it.
And I think he can win it.
Okay. I'm not saying he can't.
Look, if the Jazz are the number one defensive team in the league, which I think they can be,
yeah.
Rudy's going to get it again.
Maybe.
What I mean,
Anthony Davis really wants it this year, and at the moment the Lakers are like 0.4 points per game better in terms of defensive rating.
Agreed. So if the Lakers are a better defense than the Jazz, then Anthony Davis should get it.
I was just throwing that out there as an example.
Yeah.
I tend to look at categories like that and believe that, not that I've voted in one of these yet, this being only my second season.
They're 1/10
on the beat,
of a point better right now.
Okay. Yeah. See, there we go. I just tend to think that with awards like that, voters really tend to kind of like spreading the wealth, as it were.
But then, like, last year happened, right?
Yeah.
Where Rudy was a runaway winner.
Where he got his second.
Yeah. I agree,
but
voter
going,
fatigue is
going
a thing.
To three,
and I think narrative is a thing.
It's a whole other thing.
It's
we'll see thing. How it goes. I mean, if they do finish at or near, you know, at the top or near the top of the league in defense again, and Rudy, you know, continues this level of play, yeah, There's absolutely a case to be made for it.
And also,
we'll see how it goes. We're 8 games in.
We are eight games in.
I'm not starting the campaign yet.
But the way Rudy, like Anthony Davis, is playing with LeBron James, who is actually apparently playing defense this year. Which,
yeah.
You know, props to him, I guess.
It's been as jarring to see as your mustache.
And I think he, I don't think that keeps up for 82 games. I think at some point LeBron will slow down.
Start coasting.
Yeah, because that's what LeBron does. I honestly would pick Rudy as a favorite right now.
Okay. That's fine.
So long as he stays.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I like to play devil's advocate.
No, that's fair. What else? I mentioned one other thing as far as things we wanted to talk about today. What was that?
Something. That's a good point. I can't remember.
Oh, I said Ed Davis injury. Sorry, I pulled up the list. Ed Davis injury and Tony Bradley is kind of stepping in that role.
Yeah. Honestly, like when we finally got those long-awaited heights and weights for the team, it was shocking to me to see Ed Davis be like the guy who went down. You know, he's a center. He told us, you know, on media day,
6'9".
I'm a center. I don't play the four really. And he went from a listed 225 to like 217 or 218, and it's just like, ooh. That was curious to me, you know, because it's like he's been very effective at what he does, regardless of what he weighs, I suppose. But
yeah,
I don't know.
No, I think that was
bizarre to me.
That's not bizarre to me.
He really did not get off to a great start.
He did not,
in my opinion.
Do you think any of that was like that he wasn't strong enough?
I don't know. I mean, like, not that there's a ton of huge guys in the league. Like talking to Tony Bradley last night after the game, just like shooting the breeze with him about what it's like to guard Joel Embiid. He mentioned, man, that guy was wider than I thought.
Yeah.
W-I-D-E-R, for the record.
Understood.
You know, just talking about, like, how physically thick he was and, like, how there are so few guys in the league just built like that, you know, who play like that. And, you know, that's true, but at the same time, it's like there's enough, like, kind of big guys that, like, I just wonder about the physical toll it takes for a 217-pound guy to bang with them night in and night out. I don't know. Maybe he's not strong enough. I don't know.
I think it's fine.
I'm probably, like, worrying about,
like, this is the same Ed Davis as he was, you know, in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I guess.
That's right. You know, unless you think that he really has lost 8 pounds, which maybe he has, but, you know, I don't know that.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah,
he probably was, like, over.
I think the logical explanation for Ed Davis is poor start to the season is that he was on a new team and a new system and all the things that we've talked about for the other players that have struggled coming in with the Jazz, right?
Yeah, fair enough. I suppose I looked at his game as like being the least susceptible to that out of all the new guys because it's like, you know, he's not an offensive player, so like at all. And so and the defense has been really solid in general. And again, a large part of that is Rudy, but it just seemed like, I don't know. I looked at the things he does well and figured like those should be the most
transferable immediate things
to integrate. Yeah.
But like the rebounding is not down a ton. You know, it was 22.8 rebounds per 100 possessions last year. It's 20.7 through 6 games this year. You know, like that's 10% less. It's small sample size, right?
Yeah.
Really, the worry is the points is from 15.5 points per 100 possessions to 6.7 points per 100 possessions. And that's offense. That's working with your teammates. That's timing on pick and roll. That's all the new stuff that does take time to transfer. So, to me, not worried. I think Ed Davis will be who we think Ed Davis is at some point this season once he returns.
Yeah, probably.
But I think Tony Bradley, Tony Bradley is also who I thought he was. Like, is good on the boards, good at, like, moving people around and getting weird baskets on putbacks and can't move very well laterally defensively. So that's Tony Bradley.
Yeah. It really was interesting kind of seeing him forced into maybe a little more action than Quinn wanted him to see going against Joel Embiid with Rudy in foul trouble.
But
and those first few defensive possessions were
ugly.
Yeah. They were hard to watch. He got a little
then
better
the third
as
one
the
was
game went
good,
on.
Like keeping in front of Joel Embiid, make him do that step back Dirk shot, which he hit, which you know you tip your cap.
Yeah,
and that then
was,
after
that,
that
was a tough shot.
Defended him well in the post. I thought it was fine. Like,
yeah, I mean,
was replacement level NBA player.
Yeah, Tony Bradley is what Tony Bradley is, and you know that's a guy who probably for his career is going to max out as a third string center type.
Yeah,
you know,
maybe a backup. We'll see.
Yeah,
I mean, this is the great.
I guess we're seeing what he's capable of.
Exactly. Can he be a good backup center? Is what we're learning right now. And maybe he will be a backup center one day. But agreed, like he's not ever going to be a starter.
No, I don't think so. He doesn't move well enough.
Yeah. It's funny to me that like he is practicing his 3-point shot and it goes in way more often than you think given his shot form, which is, yeah, I'm going to say this, the ugliest shot form I've seen in Jazz history.
It's unique for sure. Yeah. I find myself transfixed by it when he comes over to that court near us where we're waiting at the ZBBC. You know,
it's weird because it releases super high, so you definitely can't block it.
Yeah.
But then his right arm, you know, he's a right-handed shooter. His right arm on his release crosses over his left hand. He does one of these. It's just like a kind of flings it towards the rim. But it goes in probably half the time.
Yeah. He definitely makes more than you would expect. And yeah, we
like I've seen some weird shots. Like honestly, how? Joe Ingles' shot is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Ronnie Brewer's shot was, you know, elbows out the whole thing. Tony Bradley's might be the weirdest. Tony Bradley's is very weird.
I haven't seen as many weird Jazz shots as you have. Like I remember growing up watching guys like Sean Marion and thinking, how did you arrive at
Sean
that?
Marion? Like Sean Marion is just like a quick release. Honestly, Sean Marion shoots like an 8-year-old, right? Like an 8-year-old who's trying to get it to go all the way to the basket, but it's too short.
Yeah.
Because you just do all of your energy is just like outward elbow energy, like meh.
Right. Yeah. Which you expect from an 8-year-old, and you don't expect from
right, and then you
from a 6'7".
But
NBA
you understand
player.
How that could have happened. Like Tony Bradley is
no,
like
I don't understand how it stayed that way. But yes, I get your broader point. Like, how did Tony Bradley arrive?
It stayed
at
that
this
way because
where his arms are crossing over.
Jean Marion was probably like an above average high school shooter, and they were like, sure, not broken.
Do your thing. It's working for you.
I don't know if he was an above average high school shooter, but like
yeah.
32% in the NBA or whatever he was is not actually terrible.
He's a good player.
Let's look up Jean Marion's 3-point percentage. That's germane to the podcast.
Yes.
I'm just legit curious.
We're not going on tangents here at all.
33% for his career.
Nice.
Great shooter. Anyway.
How very Jeff Green-esque.
Jeff Green, what do you make of him so far?
Been a little underwhelmed. Another one of these guys who...
It's the story of Jeff Green's career.
Another one of these guys who has made more of an impact on the defensive end than on the offensive end. I honestly thought... I was expecting a quicker transition on the offensive side just from what we saw in preseason. And I guess this just goes to show that... preseason means absolutely nothing.
No, I think this is who Jeff Green is offensively. He's going to shoot every corner three that he can catch. And, like, that's his role. And he gets it.
Yeah, but I thought that... I just thought he would do a little bit more than that. I mean, I know that he's not necessarily shy about doing that. But I didn't anticipate going in that the three-pointers would be, like, such a significant portion of his offense. And now I'm... stalling, trying
to look up what percentage
up
of three-point shots he has.
So
this year he's taken 3.3 three-point shots a game. Last year is 4.2, but he played more minutes. It's about the same on
he's,
a per
he's
36
taking,
basis.
He's taken 5.5 shots a game, and 3.3 of them are three-pointers.
So his
percentage of threes per game is going up.
Has gone up, yes.
So I want to see him do some of the other stuff. We saw him be effective as a post-up guy in the preseason. We saw him, like, be effective coming off screens and shooting some of those mid-range shots. I want to see him get back to that. Yeah, right now he's a little too much. Catch it in the corner and fire it up for my taste. And I know, obviously, this is not shocking to you, but I do think, I think there's capacity there for him to improve the production a bit.
Yeah,
by tweaking his shot selection.
I think the shots, I think him currently shooting every open corner three he gets is actually kind of good in the Jazz's offense right now, especially with that bench unit.
Yeah.
And he's hitting them.
So like 42.3%.
Making open threes is a good thing. Like if you continue to make 42% of your threes, great. Continue shooting every open three you get.
Yeah, do it.
I agree. I think he can find other ways to get involved. The defense is interesting to me because I don't think he's been great defensively. I think he's been
I don't think he's been great. I just think he's been better on defense than he has on offense.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Fair. And the rebounding, he was I don't want to say the biggest culprit, but he was a culprit in the Jazz losing those two games in terms of the rebounding focus.
Yeah. Which really is odd because as big as he is and as mobile as he is still at his age, as athletic as he is, there really is not a good reason for him to be as poor a rebounder as he is.
This is Jeff Green's entire career.
I know.
This is every single Jeff Green guy.
Everyone who's ever dealt with Jeff, who's covered Jeff Green or coached him or dealt with him over the years is hearing this right now and being like, welcome to our world. You're getting sucked down the Jeff Green
rabbit
hole.
He's athletic. He looks like he should be like a starter caliber player, and then he just, you know, is inconsistent. He goes in and out of games.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Like, that's who he is. For a minimum player, that's what you get.
Yeah. Yeah. I had high hopes for this for the second unit.
That
to this point have not been realized.
That was weird of you. And I honestly think Jeff Green will get better
because,
like,
optimistic.
Last year was a 13 PER, now he's down to 6. You know, like, he can clearly get more layups. You know, like, I think there are reasons to be optimistic about Jeff Green. But also, I don't think that it's smart to think that he's going to be a defensive difference maker, you know, like.
No, I don't think that. I don't think that by any means. I think, you know, if he shows competence there. Like, that's all I'm looking
for. I think he's been competent defensively except for on the boards at times.
Yeah. I just want to see some more offensive production from him.
The points.
That's what... Well, no. Yeah.
No, I know. Like, you're totally right. I'm just giving you crap for no reason.
Wasn't that the reason they brought him in?
Like, no, the reason they brought him in is because they needed someone to play the four that would make the minimum salary.
Well, right, but...
And he was the best option.
To what end?
Because he could...
They needed someone to play the four and do what?
Shoot.
Right.
Play defense acceptably.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, agree.
See? This is what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah.
You're agreeing with me.
But he
You're
has
just
shot.
Being disagreeable.
No, he has shot, though. I think we're actually closer than we both want to admit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jeff Green, you can do better.
That's
maybe,
our podcast.
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
We'll see.
No, I think,
Andy,
we think he can do better.
You can do better with your facial hair choices.
I can do better.
And your life choices in general.
Ah, so many choices.
Do you want to be stuck on negative dates?
No, I'm having a great dating life right now.
Andy and I had this, we were discussing this off the air before we started this
My
podcast,
dating life is fantastic.
Talking about the negative dates theory.
I've been on positive dates.
Okay, I hope so.
I look great.
Really?
And that's the weekly run. As always, you can subscribe to.
Trying to help you out, Andy. I have the benefit of life experience.
Uh-huh. As always, you can subscribe to the Salt Lake Tribune, sltrib.com/subscribe. I just don't want to be like you when I grow up. Please subscribe to the weekly run on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. But for now, the weekly run is out. Andy Larson, Eric Walden. See you guys. We'll be right back.